Today is Tuesday, June 18th. In the Creekside Room this afternoon, our speaker is Dean Waldo, continuing his series on plastics. Today's session is number 2 and is titled, Plastics, Aren't They All the Same? Let's listen in.
My name is Dean Waldo, and today's session, the title of today's session is Plastics, Aren't They All the Same? Is that the Creekside Ghost? Well, today what I wanted to do is talk a little bit about the various types of plastics that you may commonly know. I'm going to use a little bit to start out with what we talked about in the session yesterday, just to maybe bring people up to the same speed on some topics. But first, really just what is a plastic? And so the basic idea of a plastic is something that's composed of something called a resin and other stuff. And the resin is something called a polymer, and that the polymer is really what gives the plastic its unique and useful properties. And the other things they add to plastics are things to change subtly other properties. It may enhance something, may add color to it, may make it last longer in direct sunlight. I forgot your name.
Bill.
Bill was talking to me beforehand about some timbers that, recycled plastic timbers that people are using for decking and things like that. And those see a lot of sunlight, and so they probably have added a substantial amount of something called an antioxidant or stabilizer. But the focus, what I really wanted to talk about today, is what makes up the bulk of the plastics. And that's really the resins. And so, I think, can you see the board okay for that? Okay. So what I'll probably do is talk a little bit about what a polymer is. I won't go into the deep chemistry and name everything, but try to get you a very basic understanding of what the molecule is, and then go through the standard kinds of plastics we see and compare and contrast some of the properties and look at a few of the other properties that aren't shown in these compounds and end up looking at making something at the end. So actually, if you're interested, you don't have to, but if you're interested, we can actually make... If you're familiar with the children's toy, slime, so we can make a little of that at the end. At least I'm hoping it will work. I brought all the chemicals, but I used a rather crude balance. Gary was giving me a bad time about weighing out white powder on the balance this morning. Polymer, the word polymer comes from two words, just poly meaning many and mer meaning something, a unit of something. And so, as you can probably guess, a polymer is a molecule that's got a lot of mers in it. And so, if you think of some long chain, if you think of any chain, a car tire chain or a necklace, something like that, you can think of those as being these polymer molecules. Your body is full of these types of very large molecules. Proteins, DNA, cellulose, all sorts of things like that are polymers in your body. And the things that you see here are synthetic polymers. And just to give you an idea how big these polymers are, they get between, at least in the chemistry naming, is somewhere between 20 and 50, commonly there are 20 to 50,000 of these units form one molecule. So if we were to back up, most molecules that are synthetic form what's called a random coil. They don't have any set structure, so it looks like a plate of spaghetti. Either cooked or uncooked, some polymers line up, really make stiff, there's a lot of alignment in them, But other times, if you compare it to cooked spaghetti, there's this big glob of random oil stuff. And if you were to take this polymer and stretch it from one end to the other, okay, and let's just pretend that each of those MERS was 1 centimeter long, and let's suppose you had a 560,000 molecular weight compound. That's just a fairly common size. And let's say you made the size of the molecule a centimeter high. How long would that molecule extend from end to end is the question. And it turns out it would extend about a half a kilometer. So that's quite a distance. So you can tell that the aspect ratio here, it's a very thread-thin-like material that's very, very long. And that's very unique in the chemical world around us. And generally, there's a couple kinds of structures. There's the spaghetti structure, which is a crystalline. If you think of table salt, that's a crystalline solid so that every atom is in a nice uniform arrangement, looks very symmetric. Quite often, the polymers are in what's called an amorphous state. They're just completely disordered. Looks like that. Looks like my room, my clothes or something. But there is no order to it. And that gives it a lot of interesting properties. Let's see what else. So I think that's just a very basic introduction. So yesterday I mentioned that, I guess we're traditionally supposed to sit down. And just that there are about 150 to 200 different resins or different polymer chains, at least that are in production commercially. There may be many, many more. Well, let me just stop for a second. Again, if you have any questions, feel more than free to stop me. Say, hey, I didn't understand that, or I have a question, or I have something completely unrelated that I'd like to so just...
Petroleum is important, isn't it, making polymers?
Yeah, that's why there's a lot of concern about plastics, because they come from a non-renewable energy resource. They come from mostly from petroleum products. They're actually about, I think, 4 to 5% of that market. So most of the petroleum products goes into oil and gas, things like that. A relatively small percentage of crude oil, at least used in the United States, goes into plastics production.
Are they developing some plastics now that aren't so petroleum based, or?
Well, yes and no. I think that's a goal, is to get products that are you can produce from a renewable resource. Tires in the late 1800s to World War II were produced primarily from tapping a rubber tree. It's kind of an interesting story. Rubber trees originated, I guess, in the Amazon, and some British entrepreneur, you might say, or thief, smuggled about 70,000 of these seeds out of the Amazon area, I guess it was, and then ended up, I think Britain was colonizing a number of islands in the Pacific Basin area, and then Asia became one of the greatest producers of natural rubber from those seeds, but that was a natural polymer. The isoprene came from that tree and then could be synthesized into rubber. And that's a renewable resource. There are a few that you can use, but most of the ones that we see now are based on synthetic petroleum initial products.
That's true, right? The area over on the coast out of El Waco, where they were using Roundup tires as fill on the highway. And they developed heat, and actually was an oil product coming out, seeping out of that. In fact, you can get oil from tires when you burn them.
Yeah, burning tires are a very interesting substance. There's thousands and thousands of them. I had an article from the National Geographic that had this picture of a mountain of tires. But one of the ways they were trying to be sort of environmentally conscious with these tires, they would chip them and then put them for fill on roads. Apparently, some reaction, there were metal radial cords in these tires and plenty of water that seeped in and mixed with it, and then the added pressure was enough to start, I think they believe a reaction was catalyzed by the metal and the pressure, and started breaking down the rubber back into the original components or more oilish type things. And it actually generated quite a bit of heat, and the road started on fire from the gases escaping.
Oh, that's what started that fire.
Yeah.
So they're not going to do that anymore?
No.
Well, I don't know. They may try to use non-metal retread tires, but I think they have to be pretty careful about how they do that. Hmm. And make sure that either the conditions aren't right for that kind of reaction to start. I think they haven't had many problems in most other places in the country they've been using.
They had two areas this year where they had problems.
In Washington State. Mm-hmm. And I think they were the only places in the United States. Mm-hmm. But a number of counties have put their programs on hold where they're going to try to reuse some tires that way. Any other questions? Well, polymers, these plastics, these resins, come in sort of three basic flavors. They come in the thermoset flavor, a thermoplastic flavor, and an elastomer, or rubber. And each of those has different properties and makes them more recyclable or less recyclable. The thermosets are something like an epoxy cement. If you ever see those two tubes, cement, epoxy, things, you can mix them, they undergo a chemical reaction, and all these chains start having chemical reactions between each individual one and make one big molecule at the end. And if you try to heat that up and squish it around, it just goes right from its stuff to gas. It will basically decompose, and you'll end up destroying the plastic when you heat it. Whereas a thermoplastic is something like a pop bottle, when you heat it, it will just melt, and then you can squish it and reshape it and put it into something else. An elastomer is something that's like a rubber. It's very elastic. It can maybe stretch to 100% of its normal length. So if you take a rubber band, you can stretch it maybe to 200 or 300% times its original size. There are very few materials known that do something like that. Actually, the spider webs and the ways that clams and mussels attach to rocks are also some very naturally occurring elastomers that are incredibly strong and elastic. The clams actually, or I don't know if it's clams or mussels, actually have sort of a two-stage shock absorber system built in. They have these sort of really elastic tendons, or I don't know what they actually call them. They go to a sort of a heavy-duty shock absorber, because when the tide comes in, they can just get tremendous forces put on them. So there's a lot of places you can find this type of, not many places in nature, but I guess not many places in the synthetic world either. But what I'd like you to do is to take some of these and
these aren't made out of rubber tree?
I don't know what these are made out of.
Then it's possible that they might be, they might not.
They might be synthetic rubber. And so, if you're interested, now, just going to demonstrate a very unusual property. I don't know if you've ever played with rubber bands. I sort of sit here and, you know, I had nothing to do. Yeah, it's kind of funny, I should tell a story. First time I did this sort of demo in teaching a physical chemistry class, we went through and analyzed the thermodynamics of rubber bands. At the end of the class, they all shot me with the rubber bands, so that was kind of fun. But what happens when you heat something? Does it get larger or smaller? Usually it gets larger, right? Well, plastics have a very unusual property. If I were to hang a heavy object here, if I can do that. Now, if I were to get a hairdryer and heat up this plastic, it should get longer then, right? Mm-hmm. It doesn't. It gets shorter. Mm. And that's really unusual.
That's when like, you heat a thin plastic you put on a window and it shrinks up?
It's related to that. That's a little bit different, but it's what's happening. If you see those, well, have you heard of the concept entropy? Mm-hmm. Entropy is something, is a word that describes disorder, chaos. And so let's suppose, well, most things from thermodynamics says that if there's a change that occurs in something, it'll go to the more disordered state. That's the way it would like to go. So that's why it's so much work to keep a room straight. I like to think that I'm working against the laws of thermodynamics when I have to clean this. But what's happening, if you take a rubber band, just hold it slightly taut, then either touch it to your forehead or to your lips. Those are the most sensitive places to temperature. And then quickly stretch it. Does it get cold or hot?
Warm.
It gets warm, right? Mm-hmm. That's very unusual. It's releasing heat in some sense, or heat is coming out of it. And what we're doing is we're distorting that random structure, we're making it ordered by stretching this. All those chains end up being sort of ordered. And you've taken some of the energy out of it. So now if you take the same rubber band, stretch it and let it sit there for a second, and then let it come back together, feel the temperature. Does it get cold?
Stretch it way up.
Yeah, it has to be really about it's at the limit. And let it sit there so it gets to a normal temperature.
And then
just let it come together.
If it's cool, cools off.
Yeah, it cools off. And what's happening, it's stealing energy from the surroundings to make that random structure again. And it's really entropy that's pulling back. When you pull on a rubber band, it's that disorder. You're taking away that disorder. It wants to become disordered again, so that's why it's pulling back. And that's something very unique to a plastic, or rubber in this case.
When you were talking now, just a little bit ago, about that it shrinks with heat,
mm-hmm.
How is this connected maybe with an experience I've often puzzled about? I've sewed for many, many years. When polyester started to be made, I made a lot of things with mm-hmm. polyester, which wears very well, and particularly summer things, which we don't wear so often. We have to store, drag it out. You keep getting smaller. Now, I'm saying to myself at the beginning, probably I've gained a little weight. And then I begin to realize, no, this is really, really getting smaller, to the place where some garments that I made like 20, 30 years ago, my very slim granddaughters now are wearing, and they fit them fine. What's going on there? Just the shrinkage of plastic with heat? Maybe they're stored in a warm place?
There's a phenomenon called aging. It's not meant to, but it's sort of based on the idea that as if something ages, something changes.
Mm-hmm.
And these really randomish molecules, if you heat them up and then try to squish them into a certain shape, maybe a fiber that goes into polyester,
mm-hmm.
and then cool it down, and we're going to do an experiment like that in just a bit, across something called a glass transition temperature. It goes from sort of a liquidish to a solid thing. It doesn't eventually find its most favorable orientation or organization. And slowly over time, it finds a little bit better way to let those molecules move around and organize. And generally what happens is the density goes down, things tend to get smaller. And my guess would be that's what's happening. That it's just undergoing this physical aging. It's just finding a little bit more better way to organize those molecules, and it probably will get more brittle over time.
It seems stiffer,
right.
Which may be the same
uh-huh.
kind of thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, so that's one interesting property. So this is same thing with a tire. Anything that's elastic like that, so lycra, spandex, all those things. I often thought it would be kind of fun to design an air conditioner with rubber bands. So you take a band here and stretch it, and then you have the other side compressed and let it shrink, and it gets cool and run air through it. But it probably wouldn't be very efficient. Let's see. Another property that's really unusual. Anyone seen one of these? My daughter, actually, we use most of these cloth diapers, but we use these once in a while on the road. These are just disposable diapers. And I don't know if you've ever had the experience of, normally, like my daughter, you know, she gets wet very quickly. And I was always surprised by the fact that, you know, she can get wet. She never gets wet in these until quite a while. So what I did is I took some, that diaper actually, and took about a teaspoon of the stuff that's inside. This is something called polyacrylic acid, and it's just maybe less than a gram of material. Let's just watch what happens.
What relation does that have with the diaper again?
This is the stuff that's inside the diaper.
It's a coating?
You mean the fibers that are in there to soak up?
Yeah, there's cotton inside the diaper, and there's this stuff that's sprinkled inside the cotton at a certain density, and I just took it.
Just sprinkled inside there, just like that. Huh?
Uh-huh. Yeah, and so if you pour a little water in there, let me see.
Kind of gelling.
Mm-hmm. Huh.
So what does it look like?
Thickening. It's a thickener.
Thick.
Slime.
So how would you compare the amounts of water and the other stuff that went in there?
So what you're saying is that the diaper doesn't get as wet as a cloth diaper, huh?
Yeah.
The stuff's all changed into...
So that's what's going into our sewer system every time we put a diaper?
Is
that stuff?
The sewer, or you mean in the landfill? Yeah. Mm-hmm. This is what's in the landfill. And something that's called polyacrylic acid. It's...
Will that break down over time now?
I believe this will probably have a better chance of breaking down than most of the plastics. I'm not that familiar with any studies on it, but it's a rather... I think there are bacteria that would find this, but the problem with landfills, they try to make them a nice sealed environment, so oxygen can't get in there, sunlight can't get in there to help decompose things, so it's a great place to store things. There are bananas that people have put in landfills, and they do archaeology and excavating in the landfills, and they'll find a banana that's very little decomposed because there's just no oxygen to help in the process. But what happens in that case, just the chemistry is sort of interesting. They're on the chain of that molecule, there's little spots where there's a negative charged atom. So like table salt is a sodium chloride, and chloride has a minus charge. Well, each part, let's just put one here. Each place along the backbone has a place for a minus electric charge. And so water, H2O is polar. One part of it's really positive, one part of it's really negative. And when water goes in there, it really binds to that. And let me find some table salt here. And so, we take maybe a little more than this. I'm going to drink this later on. Well, I don't know. But I'll stir this a little bit and let it sit. And we'll see what happens. Getting soupier?
Liquid.
Yeah, it's going back to liquid in the salad. And the reason is because this ion actually gets in the way of that interaction between the polymer and the water. But this polyacrylic acid can hold tremendous amounts of water in it and almost form a solid. So it's sort of unique things that make them different. And each molecule, oh, I was going to show you.
Urine is somewhat saline, but not enough to really prevent that process from happening.
Yeah, there's a fair amount of ions in there, but I put in quite a bit of salt there. I'm doing exactly now what I tell my students who give seminars not to do. I'm putting a table of numbers on the board. I mentioned there are like 150 different, 200 different resins or polymers. And I've labeled the six that are commonly, that have the symbols for recycling. And what I just wanted to show is that there are many others that have a lot of production in a given year, and that they each have a different chemical name. Don't even worry about what the name is, just that they're different. And each polymer or resin then has different properties based on the fact that the chemical structure is different.
Those are tons of production per year?
Yeah, tons.
Wow.
I mean, there's...
So there's a lot that are, you know, possible to... in the recycling scheme, though, so that...
Right. That maybe accounts for maybe 40-50% of the ones produced.
Of course, one of the PVC, of course, is a major water carrier, too.
Pardon?
The PVC pipe, of course, is a major water carrier, so you're going to have massive production of that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for sewer and high pressure water on it.
Yeah.
Which is number three on it. But that would be recyclable, right? They could break it out.
Yeah, it's probably one of the nastier ones to recycle it. Because it has so many chlorines in it, it can form a number of rather noxious chlorine compounds.
What's this supposed to be showing?
Well, I just wanted to show you that there's many different names that represent different molecules, different types of polymers. And this is a model of a fairly common kind of plastic. Milk jugs. So this is a molecular model. And each little black bead you see is a carbon. And each hole in the black bead that I don't have anything in represents a hydrogen. But the only thing I really want you to see from this is the basic kind of structure. It's basically a long necklace-like looking thing. It can have all sorts of structures. You can make it into a ball. You can stretch it out. And if the mer in this polymer is every two, so each one of these are considered a repeat unit or a mer in the polymer type of idea. Now, so you can imagine that this is maybe one kind of plastic, and that's Nancy's low-fat yogurt here. And one property here is that these chains can rearrange and line up with each other and make little crystalline areas, which gives that strength. And that's why this is stronger than a sandwich bag, which is usually low-density polyethylene. Polystyrene, I don't know, if you think of this, then every other atom, you put a bunch of other atoms on it, this thing right here, it's called a benzene ring. And if we look, we start here, so if these are the two, my arms, the ends of the chain, you skip one carbon, here's the next carbon, it's got this extra thing off the side, skip a carbon, this one has an extra thing off the side, skip a carbon, this one has the extra benzene ring. And that's, at least on a molecular level, the difference between those two plastics. And polystyrene has very different properties than polyethylene. And, let's see, this one's pretty flexible, this one's pretty hard, this is brittle, and they have different, what are called blast transition temperatures, and I mentioned that a little bit before. the temperature at which they'll go from being hard to being soft. And it's not like ice going from a solid to a liquid, because that's going from a crystal structure to a liquid, random liquid structure. Let's see if there's a reason. So, let's do this demonstration next.
Yeah? How recyclable is the polystyrene?
It really is a recyclable plastic. It has the same problems as the other plastics, that they usually make it in different colors and have different things added to that polymer, the resin. And so if you want to take that and break it up and sell it to a manufacturer, they probably want it a specific color. They don't want it to turn out brown. Maybe in this case it's okay to turn out brown, but some manufacturers really want a specific color. And sometimes the additives aren't all that complementary. If one, because in some sense they really need to have recycling symbol number 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, but then they need to have like A, B, C, D, E, because of the different things that are added and the variety that you can add to this plastics. I'll talk more about those additives in the next session.
What would be the difference between that polystyrene, which is number 6? Is it the same basic compound structure that's also in styrofoam, because that's also
a It's exactly the same resin. It's just processed differently. Instead of having it come out of, say, a machine, the machine will heat this up until it melts and then squish it through some sort of mold. Yes, sometimes they're called twin screw extruders or all sorts of extruding machines. And it'll be just very dense. Other ways they can manufacture it, they take and get it very hot, but then inject air, little air bubbles into it. It used to be chlorofluorocarbons, and one of the big problems with styrofoam originally is that they put in chlorofluorocarbons and created, along with many other things, spray cans and stuff, created the problems of ozone depletion and refrigerants. I can talk about that next week a little bit. So they're the same exact.
You're talking about freon then, aren't you?
Yeah, freon is one of the types of CFC. It's one of the more common ones, especially for refrigeration. But there are 200 or 300 to 400 compounds that can have the same effect as freon, but with different efficiencies at depleting ozone. So yeah, they're exactly the same plastic.
But air or something is injected to.
Yeah, probably nitrogen or argon is injected in there now. Something that's much less.
It's been used as a very common cleaning agent. I think wherever they want this, no residue.
Yeah.
More used a lot. You have barrels of.
Barrels and barrels and truckloads and trainloads and billions of tons. Yeah. Now they're, when they make circuit boards, they're making circuit boards that don't need to be cleaned. They're using better soldering techniques so that they actually make the circuit board, they just don't have to clean it. So that gets rid of a lot of cost for the manufacturer and waste. So they like it, and so they're very happy to not use it. And then they can say that they're a green business and really haven't been polluting with the CFCs and things like that. But it's really beneficial, and the industry has done a lot in that sense. Especially when they can see a profit or a financial incentive to do that.
Another side thing of that is that they used to put out propaganda saying that your refrigerator was going to screw up the atmosphere. I always knew that was false because mother bought a refrigerator in 1943, and 30 years later, the door fell off, so they quit using it, but it was still functioning. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Didn't lose any freon.
As long as it doesn't lose the freon, then it won't cause any problems. But when you have to decommission a refrigerator, in other words, if the motor's stopped or it's just so old it's no longer really useful, then there are places now that you can take it and actually reclaim that CFC.
Yeah, I've been doing that. Every automobile shop has to have one of those. Yeah.
Reclamation for the freon. Okay. we started talking about glass transition temperature, and I guess I'm getting known for my toys, that Super Bowl. And this is just like the rubber band in many senses, it's an elastomer, but it's made in a very round shape. And when it bounces, it stores a lot of energy, and then like a spring, and then releases that and lets it bounce really high. And well, to do this one, I'm going to have to. Get a better work area here. It also kind of requires assistance if someone would like to assist here. Most of the time when I say that to my students, they say, oh, I'll do it. They don't know what they're going to do. Well, I have here liquid nitrogen.
Drink that.
And now you want to drink. What I'm going to do is add some I have to, it's freezing the foam around there. But so I put liquid nitrogen in this cup. I usually use styrofoam cup because it's a much better insulator, but we don't have any here. So. So what am I doing? Okay, what the person needs to do is we have a competition here to see whose ball bounces the highest. Okay.
The one with the highest number of shatter.
Pardon?
It won't shatter, will it?
No, neither one will shatter. And I can actually do the cold one, so you don't have to get cold, but I do need someone to help.
That'll be it.
I guess I can. Okay. So let this one sort of bubble help here for a while. So, just a few notes about liquid nitrogen. Does anyone know what temperature liquid nitrogen is?
350 degrees below zero Fahrenheit.
It could be. I don't know the Fahrenheit temperature. It's 77 degrees Kelvin, which absolute zero temperature is zero. So it's only 77 degrees above absolute zero. And normal room temperature for us is about 300 degrees Kelvin. So it's really cold.
You don't stick your finger in
it. Well, you can, as long as you don't keep it there. Because there's so much heat that you just vaporize the nitrogen and it creates a little insulation around you. So until your finger gets cold and it no longer does that, then you would have a problem. Okay. Now you may want to stand back. Oh, that's kind of cute.
What's it doing?
It was sort of walking on its own, so. Okay, here we go. Okay, now what we're just going to do is bounce it for a while. It bounces pretty well, doesn't it? It's sort of like a marble that sounds very hard.
Pretty good there.
I juggle on the other one. Okay, now. Let me see, we have to fill some space and I get my hands cold, warm it up a little bit.
Why hasn't it shattered?
It's
done that in the room.
I thought that a lot of things, like rubber gloves, you stick a finger in a rubber glove and make liquid nitrogen. My father-in-law works with it a lot.
Uh-huh.
And he likes to show the kids how things shatter.
It will if we hit it hard enough with a hammer when it's frozen. But this is an elastomer. And all those polymer chains are actually chemically bonded to each other, so they don't, it's harder to break them. But here, let's watch and see what happens when it warms up. Oh, wait a minute. What'd you do?
You lost
it. Just the boy.
Well, what's happening? It's
thawing a little on the outside, isn't it?
Yeah, it's thawing a little on the outside. And my hand is freezing a little on the outside, too. So it's going from something that will store energy and let it bounce to something that's viscous and will take the energy and just dissipate it and not bounce. And when it does that, temperature is going from that state where it was really hard and solid. It's warming up. It doesn't bounce. It's starting to bounce a little bit more now. I don't know if you noticed that. But as it warms up, it'll start to... It'll eventually go back to that, to an elastic solid. And that's when it's gone through a blast transition temperature. So when it's really cold, it's that hard, solid stuff. And each of these plastics that you see up here have different glass transition temperatures that are dependent on the actual molecule that it has. So like polyethylene, high-density polyethylene has a glass transition temperature of 125 degrees Celsius, negative 125 degrees Celsius. Polyvinyl chloride, so polyethylene is above or below normally at room temperature is glass transition. It's higher in temperature, so it would be more flexible. So that's something like this. If we add, well, thank you for your assistance.
Oh,
very apt. if we add a little bit. So this should now be below its last transition temperature. We'll let it sit here for a second and then while we're waiting for some of the nitrogen to disappear, keeping on that theme of the ball bouncing, so it went from a hard solid to something that was like a liquid. You'd hit it and it would dissipate the energy, to an elastic material. About 15 minutes. Well, this is, anyone know what this is?
Silly putty?
Silly putty, yeah. I have lots of fun here. So, this is silly putty. Now, what I'm going to do is I'm going to hit it with a hammer. Well, what you're supposed to notice is that the ball didn't lose its shape. Okay, with all the extra distractions. Well, since it's all gone, let's see here. So you can see that now that was well below its glass transition temperature. It's very fragile and very cold. But the silly putty, if you hit it really hard, very fast, on a very fast time scale, it retained its shape. Okay. Now what happens if we just find a place to stick this here, and we just let it sit there? What's going to happen?
Fall off?
No, it'll stretch. It'll stretch, so it's sort of flowing like a liquid.
Oh, yeah.
So when you hit it really quickly, it acts like a solid, but if you let it wait long enough, it acts like a liquid. That's really very hard to find anything that has properties like that. Just another example of silly putty. What I'm doing here is I'm heating one half of this in my hand. After holding all that stuff, my hands are pretty cold. And I don't know if you can see what color is
it. Changes. Goes back.
In this polymer, there's something called a liquid crystal also that can, it's a thermotropic, or chromo, forgetting the word here. Well, it'll change color with temperature, what I'm trying to say. There's a liquid crystal that's become part of this polymer that will change color based on the temperature. I was out shopping for all these things, and oh, this is kind of fun. So.
Kind of like the mood ring thing. Yeah, it's crazy in the 70s or 80s.
Right. And if you've ever seen those little LCD battery testers that, Energizer Bunny has? You just put it in there. It runs current through a little resistor that generates a little bit of heat depending upon how much current or voltage it can
put through there, and so you can tell how good your battery is.
Mm. Is that the same idea as using the disposable thermometers, Del? The Red Cross used to have time to do blood. You put one under your tongue. And it's based on a car chain.
Yeah. Uh-huh. So our silly putty eventually flowed. So hopefully you're convinced that it's both a liquid and a solid. The same. Okay.
And at a cold enough temperature, they will become brittle too, right?
Oh yeah.
The solution.
Well, that's maybe something.
What were you saying about a mad
glass transition for this stuff is really quite cold. It's getting close, but even at that temperature, it was still flexible. So it may be below 77 Kelvin.
Okay, so in retrospect, could you solve a problem that occurred in the late 50s for me? My kids had silly putty given to them,
uh-huh.
And one must have dropped it on a dresser. It went down behind on a shag rug, and later we found it. And it had just gone into the rug, and we figured that's a lost cause. And since there was furniture in front of it, we forgot about it. But if it had been in some other place where it was visible, would there have been any way to get it out? Could we have used liquid nitrogen, and shattered it, picked up the pieces quick or something?
Well, the problem with that is you probably would have shattered your carpet too.
Oh.
you then maybe could have separated in the end, but you probably would end up making a composite material.
to end with, let's talk about cross-link material and then give people a chance to make something here. If you're interested, or you make it in groups of two,
what the difference between, say, silly putty and one of these super balls I mentioned is that it's cross-linked. In other words, each of these molecules, if there's a black molecule, here's a blue molecule, chemically they're tied together. So the blue one will be attached here, the black will be attached to the blue here, and so forth. And every molecule is attached to every other molecule. And so what that does is it forms a network or a single molecule, and you can't separate it. Or you can't, here you can just pull this apart. And so it's not cross-linked. Whereas, a little friendly slug here is a plastic that's cross-linked and is an elastomer. And you can stretch it, same aspect ratios. I didn't get this. My wife got it for me. So. I would probably.
Sure.
Well, you don't have to believe me. So what we're going to do is take a fairly simple polymer resin, polyvinyl alcohol, and add borax, the cleaning detergent stuff. Or the, I don't know what it is. White or brighter. I put it in our daughter's diaper now. We'll add a little bit of that to this stuff, and we'll have to process it. We'll have to stir it. And what's going to happen, borax has four oxygens essentially attached to the center of the boron atom. And what happens, each of those oxygens can attach to a polymer, and since it has more than one place it can attach, it can take two different chains and tie them together. And so, hopefully, when we do this, you'll see a transformation from a liquid to a slimy, stretchy solid. So if you're interested, we can do that. Okay, so. What I've done is a very high-tech chemistry, and let me know. paper cup for one measure of ice and lid it for another. I would like you to take and pour from this bottle. This is the solution of polyvinyl alcohol. This is borax solution. It's not contact solution. And so pour.
Actually, who wants to be first here?
Sure.
So I already filled this one, so we'll put it in here. And then I'd like you to add.
Am I ending up with two partners in here?
So I have two food colorings here, and I'm giving you an assignment now. I want you to add different amounts of borax to your slime solution here, polyvinyl alcohol. I'd like you to add a full capful if it's red. Or a half a cap full in blue. So I'll add a full cap full. So then start stirring that, let's put a drop of red in. So you have to stir it pretty hard. Okay, so then the next person can fill up to that red line with this stuff. And then you choose a cap or a half cap. So a full cap is red and half a cap is blue.
How did you do the because you make it all the air?
I bought it.
I bought it as powder and then just.
Yeah, you want to stir in for a while?
Sure.
So add a drop.
It's supposed to gel. So maybe that's the end of it. Now what about the, it looks different to me at the bottom.
It is, it's not completely dissolved. That's one of the things I was concerned about. So we may have to.
What's this stuff used for?
Styrofoam cup that is the catalyst.
Well, it's 3,500 feet here.
Yeah, well, I think it's just the fact that this is
pretty soupy.
So is that working? In that case, let's add another capsule. I'm
you have in here, like with the diaper demonstration that you did, it should be...
It should go to a side. Right. Mm-hmm. And, but it would, look at that, it was clumping. Mm-hmm. Or right. It should just be a solid. You can stretch and reshape and wash.
Like the slug?
Yeah, like the slug. Mm-hmm. But I think that's a little different.
Estrogen.
catalyze reactions. And a given molecule will have a mate, so to speak, that when it links to that, it will either start a process or react with the molecule that went in there. And sometimes you can design a molecule, quite often that's how pharmacology works, like design a molecule that sort of either inhibits or goes in that enzyme and stops it from reducing whatever it produces. Or in the case of these, they suspect that the molecule fortuitously, or the enzyme, accidentally looked like it, and so it could fit into the estrogen enzyme spot, and they could either start or stop some chemical pathway. But it's really hard to call. I think things not to do are to keep plastics a lot, because when you keep them, these small molecules will start diffusing out of the plastic, and you can increase the concentration of whatever causes it. And as plastics have gotten more modern, to some degree, they've added less amounts of plastics. I've never heard of a new car smell.
Yeah.
What that is various types of phthalates. It's a PHTH, phthalate. And they put those into, in the past, they put those into plastics to change that last transition temperature. It might be quite high to add a plasticizer, it becomes more deformable. You might change it to a replacement for usable for the product that you want. But the bioactive phthalates are mutagens. They create mutants in the offspring at high levels of doses. And so there's some concern about using things like that, even though the concentrations of person in the sea are very low. But still, there's a ton of things like that. My wife had a pair of ski boots. We were moving from Illinois to Washington. We set ski boots outside. It was a nice May day, 100 degrees, gently in Illinois. And parts of the straps that were on the boots were blue and absorbed a lot. Some weren't really warm. I looked at them and said, how did they get wet? And didn't think much about it. And went to pick them up, and all the buckles shattered. Because the plasticizer had diffused out of that plastic and now it's on the surface. It had gone from above the transition surface possible to below, because that plasticizer wasn't adjusted to the last transition temperature. It just shattered just like that. And that's the zero return.
You're
using
I
try to avoid it unless, not all the time, but.
Rather than
plastic. Heating leftovers in plastic, that's a no-no.
Well, it's hard to say. To be cautious, maybe not. Especially with things that aren't designed to go in the microwave.
Like a old margarine dish, that can't
happen. Yeah, I mean, like that.
And when you see them after they've been microwaved a few times, you can tell that they're changing.
Right. Have you ever put spaghetti sauce in a margarine container?
Yeah. Even some Tupperware.
The oils from the spaghetti sauce will diffuse over the polymer and it gets this orange color. And presumably things from the polymer are diffusing out too. But it's hard to say. It's hard because you don't know what they've added, which additive they've added. And there's only a subset of these that are really considered, these that are at this time are known to be, that they're thinking about that are concerning. They're trying to do research. Anyway, it's about 5 or 4 minutes after we were shooting stop. So,
thank you. Maybe one of the kids will have.
Syrup that I use.
village is self-destructive.
I'm trying to remember.
Is it a plastic bottle or a glass?
Two.
It's plastic that had happened. Eaten in the microwave or somewhere. The syrup up a little bit.
One reason for the walkway is in Eastern Washington.
Yeah, in Eastern Washington, down by Pascal.
Yeah.
That's scary. I mean, you get set up for this.
Yeah, but I think in that case there was water that... Well, thanks.
The walk is over by Long Beach.
I haven't seen them on the map.
No.
Yeah. Yeah, really. Burning rubbers to make oil is very possible, but you end up getting so many very nasty byproducts too, unless you're very careful.
That's what happens when you have a tire fire. You know, you get piles of oil to burn, and they discharge the tire for the effluent comes, it runs off of them because it is a pestle for sure.
And
one of the products, well, some of the products don't think they're just not combustible at that temperature, it's so far away.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But yet, they take ground tires. We used to, I had a computer store, we used to cycle in Portland, very long, they would ride them, and some of them went to Jamesburg, which is a paper, and they would use the fire alcohol. Mm-hmm. But that's high temperature, and so everything destroys.
Yeah, if you run the incinerator right, you get it to burn at the right temperature. Yeah, and
at least you have to run off of the carbon.
Well, hopefully carbon dioxide, maybe a little nitrogen dioxide.
Yeah, well, hopefully enough for you to keep
it. No, I'll get it. It's not a problem. Go enjoy some summer.
Okay.
Thank you. Well, thanks for talking.